is Jo Van Cool welcoming you to another edition of Animates. And today we're going to meet a gentleman by the name of Scott Jackman, who is going to talk about using dogs to help returned servicemen and women with PTSD. Lovely to talk to you, Scott, after our various emails finally online. No. Now, question.
Yes?
How did the name Whiskey's Wish come into being?
Well, I originally had an assistance dog with another group, and his name was Whiskey. And after a holiday I took once I got out of the army, I came home and we were out shopping, and I reached down just to give him a pat and felt that some of his glands were a little large. So I took him to the vet, and the vet said that he most possibly or most likely had a sore tooth. So we booked him in for the Monday. That was on the Friday. And on the Monday when I went in, she felt the glands and then sort of had a bit of a tear in her eye and informed me that he had T-cell lymphoma. So after Whiskey passed away, I wasn't very happy with the service that was provided by the organisation I was with. So we decided, the three founders, myself, my wife Liz, and our friend Marilyn Kench from Perth, we decided to start our own organisation, and we thought Whiskey's Wish was a good name because it's a sort of name when people hear it, they go, what's that? So it's sort of like you need to explain it, and then that way people, it's a good book.
Yeah, it's a starting point. And I was certainly intrigued by the name, but when I knew about your dog and I read something about you and the dog online, so I had a bit of an idea, but that's really interesting. And I presume it was because of the fact that it wasn't working for you with the people you were with that you started the program.
That's correct.
So now when you go looking for a dog, because I gather you do help people with dogs.
Yes.
What sort of dog do you look for?
Well, we go through Best Friends Rescue, and we don't train anything unless it's a puppy, because we believe, I learned from my experiences with Whiskey, he was a rescue dog that was trained at Bathurst Correctional Centre under the management of a lovely lady called Louise Kelly. And Whiskey was originally found wandering around the Mars pet food factory, and he was very malnourished and had a chain with a D-link wrapped around his neck, and the skin had actually grown over it. And he was like, she saved him from the streets, and then she saved him from death row, and he was put with one of the inmates to be trained. And unfortunately, because he'd been mistreated, he had some quite bad behavioural traits, like he's very protective of the person that he was assigned to, and he possibly never would have passed a full public access test, but he was like my best mate, and he helped save my life because I had a reason to get out of bed in the morning. So I used to just wait till the kids and my wife went to work and the kids went to school, and then I used to just drink all day. And then once I got the dog, I had a reason to get out of bed, and I used to take him for a walk and teach him not to be so aggressive. And it meant that when we went out in public, I had to be a lot less stressed, or try to be, just so that the dog didn't pick up on my stress. But he was a very good dog. Like, if I was having a nightmare, he'd wake me up from the nightmare. If I couldn't sleep, he'd sit with me. And we actually have T-shirts that with a picture of Whiskey's face, and I believe it says something to the effect of, if you can't see the bright side, I'll sit in the dark with you.
Oh, lovely.
And, yeah, and like he was the reason, and that's why we've got on our logo it says "Dog Saving Soldiers' Lives." Because at the time I had a friend that was addicted to substance abuse, and because of Whiskey, he sort of started to come around, and I didn't drink anymore. He didn't abuse drugs, and it got us out into public a little bit, and it was it was really good. Like, it really turned my life around. And then when he died, it just devastated me because I felt like I'd lost my link with society. And, like, it's funny, I've got another dog now called Roxy, and she's got the same behavioural traits as Whiskey. And I saved her as a puppy, but she'd actually been abused beforehand. And I didn't pick her. She picked me. I went to go view her brother for the program, and I just whistled at him, and she came up and came and sat on my lap. So I thought, well, she must be meant to be. So even that, it's sort of funny in a way, or ironic, if you want to call it that, that Roxy isn't suitable for the program, but all the other, like, I help all these other people, and in the end, I didn't get to help myself the way I wanted to anyway.
Yeah, but obviously, in a way, you have, because you've helped her, and she obviously is part of your life, which is...
Oh, she loves me to death. Like, she is, like, my best friend, and even though I can't take her out in public, like, I train the other guys. I did a training course and became a dog trainer, and it's only been sort of like in the last couple of months really that I actually feel like a dog trainer. It's sort of like when you start a new job and you don't really know the ins and outs of things, and you sort of feel a bit lost, and then all of a sudden it all clicks and you feel like, oh yeah, I'm a dog trainer now.
So what do you actually train them to do?
What we do is it's for a start, it's basic obedience, and they have to be able to be out in public and not be distracted by other dogs or people. They have to be able to... We have what we call the red jacket requirements, and that's, they have to be, one, they have to be de-sexed before they can get a red in training jacket. We use a mat that's our focal point of our training, because wherever that mat's put, that the dog knows that you're putting them in a safe place. So if you were to go out to a restaurant, for instance, or in the back of a taxi, you put the mat down, the dog lies on the mat, and they know that you've put it in a spot where they're safe, and they'll just calmly sit there. And they have to be able to stay on the mat when told, and everything's done on lead, because as a service dog, they have to be able to do everything on lead, and that you never let go of the lead. It's just part
well, a
of
bit
dog.
Like a seeing eye dog.
Yeah,
too.
It's very much like that, because we do work under the rules of guide, hearing and assistance dogs, so we work under the same rules that they have for guide dogs. And what it is once our recipients see, some of our recipients receive dogs that we've rescued and trained to 6 months of age, and they have to be 6 months of age to get their jacket anyway. So then we jacket test them, and then the recipient will come to us, and they have to be able to perform the same tasks that we can with the dog by themselves. So that it's...
So it must take a while, a little while.
It does take a little while. At the moment, we've got two fosters here, and one of them's decided that it likes chewing on the couch. So,
Ever popular.
we always thought the kids would wreck the couch before anything else, but this dog's doing quite a good job all by itself. But it's coming around, and they sort of know that when they're with us that this isn't their permanent home, and when they meet their recipients, they just seem to know that that's the person that they were destined to be with.
So yeah, they sense so much, don't they?
They certainly do, and what they can do is, like, with a service dog, they have to be able, when they're fully accredited, they have to be able to perform three tasks, and there's like a list of 400 tasks that can be performed. But many of our dogs perform more than three tasks. And, like, some of those tasks could be just, like, grounding, where they lean in against the person. Another one can be being a buffer.
How do you mean that? Why do they lean in?
It sort of grounds the person, like if they're anxious or...
Oh, okay,
feeling,
I get you.
Yeah, out in public and they're starting to get very nervous or anything like that, the dog will lean into them to sort of reassure them. Or if they're going to have like a panic attack, sometimes we teach the dogs to jump up on them or bark at them if they're going to have like a little bit of an episode, and that'll snap them out of it. The other thing that a lot of the dogs will do, as soon as they pick up that you're anxious, they'll start to pull to lead you outside to get you away from whatever's distracting you or whatever's setting you off.
It's amazing. So what how do men and women who need this kind of assistance dog, how do they hear of it? And if they hear of it, do they come to you or does somebody recommend them or what happens?
Well, at the moment, we're quite lucky because a lot of the psychiatrists that know about our program will recommend, like, for people that they feel a service dog would be of benefit, they'll recommend us, or it could be word of mouth, or we don't really advertise as such. We have a Facebook page and people follow it because my wife does all the stuff on the Facebook page and puts up memes about dogs and the progress of some of the dogs in a program, where, you know, like with Milestone when they get their red jacket, for instance. So
I must look you up on Facebook because I haven't done that. I must have a look and see what I can see.
Oh, you're a bit naughty then. You should have.
You should
be all over that.
I know. I don't use Facebook as much as I should. I largely use it to keep in touch with my grandchildren.
To be honest, if I didn't have the charity work, I wouldn't even be on Facebook. I think it's sort of taken away a lot of that personal.
Yeah.
They grow up to have friends that they've never met and they don't have the social skills to actually interact in person.
Oh, well, that's true. What do you notice particularly happens when someone suffering from PTSD gets a dog? What happens to the person? Is it always the same? Is it affect you?
Not always the same. It's usually they're very excited and usually quite emotional. A lot of them cry and because they're so happy, not because they're sad, obviously.
Mm.
And then when they cry, of course, the dog comforts them and, you know, might jump in their lap and lick their face or something like that. And it's just that tactile type interaction that it helps them nearly straight away. You can see I love to see the smiles on people's faces, even if it is for a stream of tears when they get their dog. And it's a nice feeling to see someone actually, some of these people haven't smiled or talked in a long time, and it's a big deal for them to actually come here in the first place to meet us to get the dog, because a lot of them are quite sort of anxious that they, what if I don't do everything right, well, I won't get the dog. But we work with them but we've never had a dog that didn't match a person. And if they didn't, we have had dogs return to us, but it's usually because the family situation's changed. Like, it may have been a single person and they've found a partner, and because they found a partner, either the partner's jealous of the dog or...
Yes, that can happen.
That can happen, yes. And it's a big thing, some of them can't handle, because it's a catch-22, you've got a dog in a training jacket, and then the first thing when you go out, people ask, what's a dog for? So it can be, but we have cards that sort of help them along their way, because they write the name of their dog on the card, and it'll say, my name is Whiskey. Don't be offended if my handler doesn't stop to talk. And then on the back, it'll have the rules of, you know, you shouldn't ask someone what their disability is. You shouldn't distract the dog while it's working and so on. So it gives them a little bit of an idea.
And I think, too, people are becoming much more aware of PTSD and the fact that people do have issues when they've been in a war zone or when they've been in a very traumatic situation. People come away with issues, inevitably.
That's for sure. And we supply and train dogs for all veterans from all three services.
Oh, there's yours.
Yeah, there's my dog going off.
Now, I wanted to ask you, do you get any government funding?
No, we have no government funding. We started off self-funded. Now it's donations from the public. We do sell some merchandise that we do make some money back on, which all goes back into the program. Not any of it's spent on anything else. No one's paid. We do pay some trainers in remote areas, as some of them would do it for nothing, but we believe if we pay them, they'll stick to our program.
Yeah, yeah. It's a constant problem.
It is, and we don't get anything from the government, and the RSL say they support us, but that's just words, so they don't support us financially or anything, and we do have fundraisers. We're running a raffle up here at the moment for a holiday house that someone kindly donated a week. I've been on the Sunshine Coast. But apart from that, and some other organisations that raise money for charities like Shepherds Australia in Melbourne, they do a ride for us. They did one for us last year. We have a guy called Kirby Stocks that's going to paddle across Bass Strait in a kayak for us, which is quite crazy.
Oh, yeah, but good luck to him.
Yeah, I hope
but look, funding is always a problem, and I talk to so many people with animals of various kinds who get no funding and they just struggle on.
We supply everything for nothing. It was a promise that we made when we started, so we supply all the equipment. We pay for any training that's done outside of Brisbane or what, because some of it we can do via electronic means. Like everyone has to send in logs to comply. Once they get their red jacket, they have to comply with the guide hearing assistance dog rules, and that rules are that they have to, before their PAT test or the public access test, they have to have 6 months of continuous logs with video evidence as well. They may not even look at it, but if we were to be audited, then we have it all on file, and it's all our dot our I's, cross our T's. We supply everything for nothing. So at the moment, we've closed off applications so that we make sure that the funds that we do have, we can look after the people that are in the program. So there's a little bit of a waiting list at the moment, but I think we'll be able to open up applications again, hopefully at the start of next year.
Do you find that everyone who applies comes from Queensland, or do they?
No, all over Australia.
Yes. Yeah, because they're not too many organisations like yours, actually.
We're quite different because we do let people with their own dogs come in as long as they're suitable and not considered a dangerous breed anywhere in Australia. And they have to be 3 years or younger to be in the program, because anything older than that, it takes 18 months to 2 years to train them fully. And some of them are already pretty much trained, so it might only take 6 months. So it's just a matter of, and we do have some dogs that from other groups that have already been public access tested, but they'll come across to us afterwards because for one reason or another, they've had a falling out or whatever. And we're, as long as they follow our rules, and we're very strict, and we have to be, because when we were young, we found out the hard way what happens if you're not strict enough. And it's sort of, I think the amount of paperwork that you have to fill out to get into our program, it sort of stops the people that just sort of think all of a sudden, oh, I want a service dog. But also we insist on having a psychiatrist letter to state that they would be suitable for the program and that a service dog
would
actually.
That's a good idea.
We're putting it back on the treating psychiatrist so that they're not just signing off and saying, yep, you can have a dog. It's because they believe that it would actually help them.
I'm sure. So you have to be contacted either through Facebook or through presumably a phone number or whatever. Would you like to promote your organisation so that men and women all over the place can get in touch with you if they're suffering from PTSD, etc.?
Well, the best way is through our website, which is www.whiskeyswish.org.au.
Right.
And they can then put in an expression of interest, and then we take it from there where we contact them, we have a little bit of a chat, and then we send out the expressions of interest. So it's actually a document that sort of goes through all the things that might happen when you explaining that you may get attention drawn to you because you've got this dog. Are you prepared for that? What it generally costs to maintain a dog. So we don't pay for the maintenance of the dog, but we pay for all the equipment. We sort of give them an idea of what.
Well, you're giving them a start, aren't you?
Yeah, that's correct. And then we send out an information letter that explains how to fill out the application. Because the application is 18 pages long. But
wow.
Yeah, I know. It used to be 3 pages. But it's good in a way, because then people that don't really want to do it, they just sort of thinking, oh, yep, I might go get a service dog. It makes them realise that if you want it, you have to put in the work to get it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it could be their carer or another person or a third party, like their case manager or something like that, that actually helps them fill it out because they're not capable of doing it themselves.
Right.
And the other way of contacting us is on our Facebook, which is Whiskey's Wish, and it's WHISKEY with a hyphen, then an S, and then WISH.
Right. Well, that's great. Thank you very much for all of that information. I'm sure there must be so many people who will be listening to this program in due course who will be most interested in what you have to offer or might know of somebody who really would benefit.
There's also a lady called Laura Greaves who's writing a book called Dogs with Jobs, which will come out through Penguin, I believe, in November, and there's a chapter on Whiskey's Wish.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. I shall have to get a copy.
Yeah.
Lovely idea. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for spending the time. I gather your dogs wanted to be in on the act, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And last but not least, I'd like to put in a special plea for anyone who knows of somebody who has a disability of some kind and also an animal that assists in some way, be it physical or psychological. We'd love to hear from you. You can contact us through our webpage or ring on 9518 8811. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, it's Jo Van Cool saying goodbye for now.